Welcome to On The Moneyline, a podcast by MMA Play 365. I'm Noosam and I'm here to break down UFC Paris, which goes down this weekend in France, headlined by the heavyweight fight between Cyril Gane and Sergey Spivak. And just a really quick one, as of yesterday, we are one fight down. We're supposed to have had Taylor Lapillus making his UFC debut against Muin Gafarov, but Muin Gafarov, I think, had some visa issues, so Lapillus is no longer got an opponent. I don't know if he's still going to be on the card or not. Obviously, he's not going to be in this breakdown podcast. If, however, he does get another opponent throughout fight week, I will put into the comments onto YouTube, on our YouTube channel, on the video on YouTube, of a very quick prediction between Lapillus and whichever fighter they get to step in. And like I say, that's of course, they do find an opponent for him. But just before we get started, as always, there's going to be a Base AI recap from last weekend's event at UFC Singapore. Straight pick prediction accuracy was just above 50%, so it was lower than usual, but there were still some really good predictions in there. So if you are interested in those recaps, where we look at where the AI was good, where it was not, where the value was, if you're interested in AI and AI within the MMA world and of course UFC, then make sure you check that out. That'll be on a specific playlist on our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/MMAPlay365. But as for the breakdowns, let's get started. In the main event in the heavyweight division, we've got Cyril Gane versus Sergey Spivak. And this is a really interesting fight. Stylistically, we've got a stylistic clash, which, you know, are fights that I always love, you know, striker versus wrestler grappler. It's always a real interesting dynamic. And with Sergey Spivak, I feel like a lot of the casual MMA fans, which there's absolutely nothing wrong with being a casual MMA fan for what it's worth, but I feel a lot of the casual MMA fans probably won't have heard of Sergey Spivak, you know. He's not a known name, he's been quietly flying under the radar, making his way up the rankings, and especially the French fans inside the arena, I think they'll be going in there expecting Cyril Gane to just absolutely run through Spivak. Obviously, like I say, if they've never heard of Spivak, and they know that Gane's a multiple UFC championship fighter who's gone five rounds and is their French superstar, yeah, I think they'll be expecting a one-sided fight. And to be honest with you, I'm not sure it's going to play out like that. Like, you look at the style from a striking perspective, and there's absolutely no debate Cyril Gane is the better striker in this fight. If this was a K1 fight, or if this is a 25-minute kickboxing fight where the majority of the action and the bigger moments do take place on the feet, then Cyril Gane's going to win this fight and, you know, will probably look like a huge favourite. But it's not a kickboxing fight. It's mixed martial arts. It's MMA. And with Sergey Spivak being the wrestler and grappler, he does know where he's strongest. And he's one of these fighters where his striking, you know, obviously isn't going to be anywhere close to the level of Gane, but it's good enough for him to be able to close the distance, get a hold of his opponents and take them down to the mat. And he's got some real good top control time. He trains out of Extreme Couture, which is a wrestling heavy gym. So he's going to have the game plan here to come in there and take Gane down. And if he doesn't, then, you know, that'll be a really bad move from Spivak because it'll be a long and bad night for him. The thing is with Cyril Gane, stylistically, where he's weakest is where Spivak is strongest. And you look at Gane's two losses in the UFC, they've come to Francis Ngannou and John Jones. Now, the one thing I will say is Ngannou and Jones are and were the elite of the elite in the UFC heavyweight division. So you can't hold it too much against Gane for those losses because most fighters would lose to Ngannou and Jones as well. It's just how he lost. Like, Francis Ngannou is known as a power striker, you know, putting people's lights out. And of course, he was improving his wrestling over time. But he went in there, he lost the first two rounds to Cyril Gane. He was on, I think, an ACL or MCL tear on one of his knees. And even though he lost those first two fights and it looked all but over in regards to Gane just cruising to a victory, Ngannou started getting the wrestling going in rounds 3, 4, and 5 and actually won the last three rounds with wrestling and topside grappling. Even at one point, Gane was on top of Ngannou and Ngannou swept him. So a real strange outcome, one that I don't think anybody was expecting. I had money on Francis Ngannou in that fight and I didn't expect that performance. Then you look at John Jones. Now, sure, John Jones has got that wrestling background. We all know that, but he's most known for being a creative, elusive striker, fast movement, creates really good angles. But he went in there against Cyril Gane, took him down, or got the fight down to the mat, and submitted him within, I think it was just over 2 minutes. So it's a real issue for Cyril Gane against these types of fighters. And against Spivak, he's going to be the bigger fighter in there. He started weighing in at like 235, 240 pounds, I think. And then every single fight that he's had for the last, I think, three or four fights, he's weighed in a bit heavier each time. And that's going to suit the way he likes to fight in regards to the wrestling and grappling. He's scored nearly 30 takedowns in his UFC career so far. He's scored 12 takedowns in his last two fights. So it's really going to be a battle of, can Spivak get inside of Cyril Gane's striking range, take him down and control him topside? And I think if he can, I think Sergei Spivak's got a really good fight ahead of him. Of course, he's going to have to be careful from a striking perspective. He can't get too close in regards to just staying put or staying at the range Gane wants to fight at. So I do think it's going to be a real back and forth fight, but ultimately I think it's going to be a true mixed martial arts fight where we do see wrestling, we do see grappling. And like I say, I don't think that Gane is going to go in there and whitewash Sergei Spivak. I think Sergei Spivak's going to have opportunities and moments where he can get his wrestling going and his topside grappling. And I actually think over five rounds, if he does start to take Gane down with regularity, and even if he doesn't submit him early in this fight, or even if he fails on a couple of takedowns, or Gane stands up after the first couple of takedowns, unless Gane puts Spivak out, I think Spivak will just keep coming, make the fight dirty, ugly, grind away, relentless wrestling against the cage, and eventually it could start tiring Gane out, because that's not Gane's game. Gane will have cardio for days within the striking, but when he's forced to defensively wrestle and grapple, that's where he'll start tiring. So I actually think that this is a stylistic fight that favours Spivak. So for those reasons, I'm picking Sergei Spivak to win this fight. Next up in the co-main event, we've got another French superstar. We've got Manon Fiorot versus Rose Namajunas. Now, Namajunas is moving up in weight, and I think this is the biggest takeaway from this fight, from the breakdown perspective. How is she going to look in a weight class above? She wasn't a massive strawweight fighter, but, you know, it might serve her better to move up in weight and, you know, fight at a higher weight, less of a weight cut. I don't know. It is a bit of a strange move, but it's one that we don't know whether it's going to be a good move or a bad move until after we've seen this fight. Now, from a stylistic perspective, look, in fact, before we get into that, the first thing we've got to mention is that snooze fest between Namajunas and Carla Esparza. It's a real, real strange fight, and one that's gone down as one of the most boring, actionless fights in UFC history. But it was also a bit of an anomaly fight. And what I mean by that is how many times that fight happens where both fighters just don't want to engage and there's no action at all is very slim. You look at, it happened a few years ago with Francis Ngannou and Derek Lewis. You know, both those fighters have never been in a snooze fest since then. They weren't in a snooze fest before then either. It was just that one weird fight. And I kind of feel that Namajunas is in the same boat. She's never had that type of fight before. It was a strange one. And I don't expect her to have that type of fight again. I don't know whether she was worried about Esparza's wrestling. Whereas with Manon Fiorot, if Rose Namajunas comes into this fight wanting to delay action and things like that, Manon Fiorot won't allow that, because she'll be the one coming forward and being active. So I do think it's a fight that you can sort of, you know, just put to one side and forget about it a little bit, because I don't think that it's going to have any relevance to this fight. Now, what I will say about this fight stylistically is, look, Rose Namajunas is a solid fighter. She's good everywhere. She's a good striker. She can wrestle. She's a good grappler. And you can say the exact same thing about Manon Fiorot. Now, it's a little bit of a cliche, but Fiorot initially in the UFC was running through women and getting wins easily. But the more she steps up in competition, the more competitive the fights get. And like I say, I know that's a bit of a cliche, but it's true. And with Namajunas, remember, outside of that Carla Esparza fight last time out, she's coming off back-to-back wins against Zhang Weili, who is, you know, looking absolutely out of this world at the minute. So she knocked Zhang Weili out, and then she won by a split decision in a hard-fought five-round fight after that. So Namajunas has got all the skills to be able to do well in this fight. It's just, I think it's going to come down to a couple of things. I do think we're going to see a little bit of wrestling and grappling, but I think the fight's going to be won and lost on the feet. And I think it's going to be the power shots of Fiorot versus the speed and movement and the activity of Namajunas. Now, by the numbers, Fiorot does have a high volume strike count, but Nami Yunus, with the speed and movement, moving up in weight, that's the one thing she will have an advantage in this fight, I believe. I do think that, again, the speed, movement and the activity is going to be on the side of Nami Yunus, but the physicality and the power is going to be on Fiorro. So I do anticipate that it's going to be one of these really close fights, and if there's not a finish, it'll go to the scorecards. It could potentially be one of these split decision types of fights. But Nami Yunus, you really can't count her out in this fight. She's by far the best fighter that Fiorro's going to have fought to date. And you look at Fiorro's last fight against Chookagian, she dropped a round on all three judges' scorecards, which shows that Fiorro can be got at. She can lose rounds. And ultimately, because of that, she can be beaten. It's just, is Rose Nami Yunus going to be the fighter to do that? Now, when you look at Nami Yunus and Chookagian, I think Nami Yunus is a better version of Chookagian. And yeah, look, I think it's going to be a close fight. Like I said, it's going to be the power and the physicality of Fiorro versus the speed, the movement and the activity of Nami Yunus. I'm going to side on the speed, the movement and the activity. So I'm picking Rose Nami Yunus to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Benoit Saint-Denis versus Thiago Moises. And this is a really, really good fight. Saint-Denis coming off that outstanding win against Bonfim last time out, where he was a big underdog, absolutely ran through him, finished him, and just looked unbelievable. Now, because of that, I do think there's a bit of market overcorrection on the betting line. Benoit Saint-Denis, he was sitting at around plus 100, minus 110, you know, a couple of days before fight week, and now he's like minus 160, minus 170, so all the money is coming on Saint-Denis. And when I was actually watching this fight, I was watching it when the fight was essentially a pick'em, and I'll be honest, I wasn't completely sold on Saint-Denis running through Moises like he has done in previous fights. And the reason why is the way Saint-Denis fights, yes, he's aggressive on the feet, but he'll always look for that takedown, the wrestling, the grappling. And the thing is, once this fight hits the mat, and I do anticipate this fight hitting the mat numerous times, he's going to be in Thiago Moises' world now. Moises has only really been dominated in the ground game by Beneil Dariush. That was his UFC debut. He got a bit big brothered by Dariush, who was, you know, experienced, a little bit more physical, a little bit stronger. And also, Dariush's jiu-jitsu is elite. So the topside pressure really caused Moises' issues. But in this fight with Saint-Denis, when Saint-Denis goes down there with Moises, he's going to be entering his world. Moises has got really good, does really good work off his back. He'll attack knee bars and heel hooks and leg locks, even if it's just a means to creating a scramble and getting back up to his feet. Now, Saint-Denis is a good grappler as well, but in this fight, I kind of feel like Moises is going to be the better grappler. And on the feet striking, look, Saint-Denis can be aggressive. We saw that against Bonfim, but like Saint-Denis just, I think, maybe lost himself a little bit in that fight with the strike, and he was just throwing body kick after body kick after body kick. He wasn't setting it up. He must have thrown four or five in a row, and Bonfim made the mistake of just calling him on and not trying to, you know, counter it or figure it out quick enough. I think Moises has got the experience in this fight to be able to deal with that aggression that Saint-Denis brings on the feet. Now, I think Saint-Denis is the better wrestler, but like I say, when it hits the mat, I think Moises is going to be the better grappler. I don't think Saint-Denis is going to be able to control the positions against Moises like he has done in previous fights. And because of that, I do think Moises is going to be able to do good work on the mat, even if it means standing back up or getting his own takedowns or creating a scramble or sweeping Saint-Denis. I feel like the fight is going to be won and lost with what happens on the mat, and I think Moises is the better grappler. So for those reasons, unfortunately, look, I love Benoit Saint-Denis. I really, really do. I think he's a solid fighter, but in this particular fight, stylistically, I think he's going to run into problems that he hasn't run into before. So for those reasons, I'm picking Thiago Moises to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Volkan Ozdemir versus the newcomer Bogdan Guskov. And watching Bogdan Guskov, he trains, it seems, out of American Top Team. You know, he's looked great in his fights. He's got power. He's got a good striking ability. We've not seen too much from the wrestling and grappling, although I don't expect there to be much wrestling and grappling in this fight. Ozdemir, you know, he can wrestle, he can grapple. We've seen it before, but he's a fighter that does tend to keep fights on the feet. And the only issue that I've got with Guskov here is he beats and wipes through and knocks out the opponents that he should absolutely be knocking out. But then he'll have one or two fights where he fights a real fighter that's got experience, that's been in there against a good level of competition. And what you expect actually happens. And what I mean by that is, you know, the knockout power doesn't translate in that specific fight because of the defense of the experienced fighter. And the experienced fighter, you know, is slowly working the way into the fight, just landing some nice strikes, nice fundamentals, while Guskov's trying to knock them out, be aggressive and move forwards. But then when the experienced fighter makes the reads and really starts to be able to put some power behind the strikes, he can be got at. And there's an element of that in this fight with Ozdemir, because Ozdemir is the more experienced fighter, been in there against better level competition. He's got a good striking base. He's been in there with better fighters than Guskov. So I kind of feel that there is an element of that in this fight. Like, is Guskov developed enough to be able to actually start beating these fighters that aren't going to go away easily, are more experienced? We'll find out on Saturday night. But I don't trust Ozdemir for, you know, different reasons. Like, I think Ozdemir has been a great fighter in the UFC, but the last few fights, he's not really looked himself. He looks a little bit slower than usual. The one-punch knockout power, because remember, he had that weird, those weird knockouts where he was hitting people that didn't look like there was much behind them and knocking them out. Those knockouts have slowed down a little bit. He's struggling to really get a foothold in his fights and pull away. Like against Krylov, for example, I had money on Ozdemir in that fight, and Ozdemir did really good work against Krylov in that first round, but then he allowed the fight to get away from him. Krylov started getting a foothold and it started pulling away, and Ozdemir just couldn't get back in the fight. He started tiring out. I just don't think Ozdemir has looked that great in his last few fights. Even the Paul Craig fight, he didn't look, you know, too outstanding. So I think there's going to be opportunities for Guskov in this fight to be able to actually find something on Ozdemir. And if Guskov has developed to the point where he's going to be able to compete from a technical perspective, striking perspective against Ozdemir, then he's going to give himself every chance of winning this fight, again with the power behind it as well. And even if he doesn't knock Ozdemir out, if those developments are there from Guskov, he could potentially just, you know, land a little bit more volume, be a little bit more active, and if the fight goes to a decision, then he could potentially win a decision as well. So, like I say, there's issues on both sides for me, but ultimately I've just run out of trust with Ozdemir at the minute. You know, I'm always open-minded. He could change my mind. We might be breaking another Ozdemir fight down in the next few months where I say, do you know what? He is more trustworthy now. He turned that corner for me. But right now, I just trust Guskov a little bit more than Ozdemir. So for those reasons, I'm picking Bogdan Guskov to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got William Gomez versus Lucas Almeida. This is going to be a fun striking war as well. Lucas Almeida making a quick turnaround from that loss against Pat Sabatini. And one thing I said in that breakdown a few weeks ago with Almeida, and the same thing still stands. I just wish the dude would come over to like an American top team or a Killcliffe FC, just somewhere where he's going to be training and working with high-level coaches, high-level training partners, because he's got all the ability, in my opinion, to be a world-class fighter. And his striking's insane, like the power that he's got, his really good Thai base, and I feel like he's got the ability to develop rapidly so much where he can be a real problem. But until he does that, I still think that he's going to have these on and off performances. I don't take too much away from the Pat Sabatini fight. We all know where Sabatini is good, and you know, he implemented his game plan and did what he needed to do. But like I say, Lucas Almeida, I feel like he's not going to be developing as rapidly as what he would if he moved over to one of the major MMA gyms. Now with William Gomez is a natural striker. He's got a little bit of wrestling as well, but he's tall, he's long, fights in a southpaw stance. So I think it's going to be a real good battle. And I just, one thing that William Gomez does really well is his defense and recognition of danger. So he doesn't get in there and start trading wildly with his opponents. He doesn't get hit all too much either. He's very defensively aware, puts the defense before the offense. And that's not, at some point when you make your way up the UFC rankings, you know, or if he does, then that will become a problem. You've got to have good offense as well as good defense. And I'm not saying his offense is bad, it's just he prioritizes defense a little bit. But in this type of fight against Almeida, who's probably going to be quite aggressive, wanted to come in there and get a win back after the loss a few weeks ago, I think that Gomez is going to be able to really play with him from a defensive perspective. And I think that, look, Almeida's got every chance of going in there and, you know, finishing Gomez, knocking him out, looking great. We've seen it before, but Gomez has got this ability where he can use his speed, movement, his striking defense to just slowly pull away from fights, make his opponents frustrated that they can't land on him. And I think that's what's going to happen in this fight. I think Gomez is going to do really good work defensively, attack when he needs to, and just slowly just edge out the rounds. I think if a finish is in this fight, I do expect it to be more from Almeida's side. But like I say, Gomez's defense and the fact that he gets hit not a lot throughout his rounds and throughout the fights, I do think Gomez has got a good advantage in this fight and should be able to edge out the rounds. So for those reasons, I'm picking William Gomez to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got two UFC debutants. Now, I can't think off the top of my head a better fight in UFC history for two debutants coming in than these two guys. These two guys look absolutely legit. They look world class where they are right now. They're going to be a problem for future fighters in the division. Unfortunately, one of them's got to lose in this fight, but that doesn't change anything. Both of these fighters are going to do really good work in the UFC. They could both potentially be ranked in the future as well. They are really, really that good. We've got Yannis Gamori versus Kaolan Lochran, and this is another clash of styles as well. Although both fighters can strike, both fighters can wrestle, both fighters can grapple. We've seen it in tape. I've seen it in tape from both guys. Both guys are really, really good everywhere and really strong everywhere as well. But Gamori is going to be more of the striker in this fight, whereas Lochran is going to be more of the wrestler and grappler. And honestly, the fight is amazing. So from Yannis Gamori's perspective, he's unbeaten in K1 competition. He's a K1 French national champion. And like I said, I've seen in tape, he's fought in Brave. So he's fought for, you know, a really good promotion, one of the world leading promotions, I would say in the top five in the world. And he's beaten good opponents as well. I've seen that he's got a good body lock. When he's on top, he can control a top position. We've seen him fight good grapplers where it looks like they might have caused a scramble to escape, and Gamori's just halted that in its path and continued with the heavy top pressure. And like I say, on the feet, he's just a phenom. Like, brutally hard low kicks. He's finished multiple fights with low kicks, just damaging the lead leg of his opponents and getting them out of there. Real, real exciting fighter. And you've got Kaolan Lochran on the other side. Kaolan Lochran, he's a little tank inside the cage, you know, small but built really thick. He's got good power in his hands. He likes to wrestle. He's got a good grappling game as well. He's a Cage Warriors champion, and we know what to expect from those guys. And like I say, he's going to be a fighter that's going to do really well in the UFC as well. But as for how they match up from a striking perspective, I think he's going to be on the side of Gamori. And from the wrestling perspective, like I said, he's going to be on the side of Lochran. So whose style gets implemented the most in this fight? And it's important because whoever that is, I think, is the fighter that's going to win the fight. And I kind of feel it's going to be Gamori. There's a couple of reasons why. Firstly, you look at the wrestling of Lochran. Lochran does tend to prefer to shoot against the cage wall, have his opponents back against the cage wall, and then take them down from there, where he can really use the low center of gravity and his strength to pick his opponents up, slam them, and then, you know, do good work from a grappling perspective, look to take the back and make it difficult for them to stand up. The thing is with Gamori, with him being a K1 fighter, his movement's going to be really good, his speed's going to be good, they're going to be in the big cage here. So I just don't know how many opportunities Lochran's going to get to actually shoot the takedown against the cage. Maybe he scores open mat takedowns, but that doesn't seem to be where he's strongest within the wrestling from what I've seen. I'm not saying that he can't shoot open mat takedowns. I'm just saying that he looks like he prefers the takedowns against the cage wall, which might be limited in this fight against Gamori. Now, from Gamori's perspective, like I've already said, the low kicks are one of his best weapons. The straight punches down the middle as well are really good weapons for him as well. And the one thing that I've noticed from Lochran, he's got a wide stance. He leans really, really heavy on that lead leg. So if he does that against Gamori, if he doesn't change his stance for this fight, that leg is going to be there for Gamori to absolutely chew up. And I think that's a real problem for Lochran. And Lochran can be a little bit hittable as well. The head's kept on the center line a little bit. Again, he's young. He's going to be making development. So look, maybe he comes out in this fight with a bit more head movement, you know, less of a wider stance, doesn't lean too heavy on that lead leg, and in that case the game changes. But from what I've seen in tape is all I can go on when I'm making this breakdown. So I think Gamori's going to have opportunities to chew up the leg of Lochran, slow him down, start making him limp in, really damage that leg, and then hit him with the straight shots when the head's on the center line. Like I said, it's a phenomenal fight. It's tough that I've even got to pick a winner in this fight because they're both that good. And like I say, they could both end up meeting later down the line when they're both top 10 fighters. It's one of those fights a bit like Bilal Muhammad and Vicente Luque. They met very early in the UFC and then later in the top 10 they met again. And I think the same thing could happen here. But for this fight, I've got to pick a winner, unfortunately. And for the reasons I've mentioned, I'm picking Yannis Gamori to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got another former Cage Warriors champion. And this one is long overdue, in my opinion. We've got the last pirate, Morgan Charrier, making his UFC debut against Manolo Zecchini, who's also making his UFC debut. Now, for those fans that have never seen Charrier fight or not heard too much about him, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that the response that Charrier gets from the French crowd on Saturday night is going to be louder and more crazy than the response Cyril Gann gets at heavyweight. This is how much Morgan Charrier is loved by the French fans. He's an absolute legend in French MMA already over there, and he hasn't even made his UFC debut yet. And the dude is just an exciting fighter. He's lovable, he delivers, he goes to war, and that's what the French fighters like. Oh, sorry, the French fans like to see. Now, against Manolo Zecchini, he's not a bad fighter, but, you know, I don't mean any disrespect with this. I kind of feel like the UFC know what they're doing here. They don't want Morgan Charrier to come into this fight in France, making his UFC debut after all the noise that has been delivered from himself and his fans and his fan base, to come in there and lose in front of his home crowd. I do think Zecchini is going to be able to put up a fight, but I think Charrier is just going to do better work throughout. I think he's going to be the better wrestler, the better striker, the better grappler. He lands hard shots with his punches, he's got good low kicks, and like I say, he can look for a takedown, and he's got good grappling as well. Now, Manolo Zecchini is a lot like that also. He's a decent striker, he's got decent wrestling, decent grappling. It's just, I feel like this is one of those fights where Charrier is just going to be very slightly better in every single area, which is then going to make him look a lot better as a fighter on the night as well. Manolo Zecchini has got the opportunity to maybe, you know, get Charrier in a war, exchange punches and maybe rock him, hurt him and try and finish the fight from there. But if he doesn't do that, I think Charrier is going to land more volume. He's going to land the harder shots. And Charrier has also got a good chance of, you know, finding that finish as well. So I do think it's going to be not a great night for Zecchini. Props to Zecchini for stepping up to fight Charrier, knowing that he's going to be in a cauldron in there against fans that are going absolutely nuts in his fighter's home country, in his opponent's home country. I really hope that Zecchini does give a good account of himself. I hope that he gets another fight after this in the UFC as well. But for this specific fight, I think Charrier is just going to be the much better fighter. So for those reasons, I'm picking Morgan Charrier to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Zahrah Fenn versus Jacqueline Cavalcanti. Now, the first thing I'm going to say about this fight is, personally, I don't think Cavalcanti should be a -375, -400 favourite, of course, at the time of me recording this podcast. But I do think that she's got a really good style to beat Zahrah Fenn. And when I say style, it's actually going to be, you know, a very similar style from both fighters. Both fighters prefer to stand and strike from what it seems. And it feels like, look, Zahrah Fenn's going to do enough work in this fight to not justify the betting line. I do think that, look, she's very big, she's very stocky, she's got some power. And, you know, we saw in the last fight against Josiane Nunes that, look, she can do good work in fights. She hurt Josiane Nunes. She was a big underdog in that fight as well. And the first round was great for Zahrah Fenn. It's just after that first round, Josiane Nunes started taking over. But it's going to be a different fight here because Nunes is that small, bullish fighter that's going to look to get inside of boxing range and rip combinations with insane volume and target the body in the head, whereas Cavalcanti is more of a more relaxed striker. She's a fighter that will use good movement, she'll pick her shots, she's got good fundamentals, she'll target low kicks just while she's making reads. And like I say, she'll put some good strikes together, but just in a different way than Zahrah Fenn's last opponent. So Cavalcanti can also be hit as well. I've seen fighters, even though they've been bloodied up and Cavalcanti has been controlling the fight, she does give her opponents moments to have their own moments. So I think Zahrah Fenn's going to be able to land some strikes here. It's just I'm not totally trusting her to be able to do that over three rounds. Whereas with Jacqueline Cavalcanti, look, she's fought in some good promotions. She was an LFA champion, which is exactly the same as a Cage Warriors champion. You know that anybody that's been a champion in an LFA has definitely got something about them. And she's fought in UAE Warriors, she's fought in PFL, so she's fought some good opponents. And of course, she's gone five rounds, so the cardio is going to be there. I think she's going to have a cardio advantage over Zara Fearn. Like I said, I think it's going to be a back and forth fight. I do think that Fearn's going to have a moment, but I think the longer the fight goes on, the more Cavalcanti is going to make it obvious that she's the better technical striker with better accuracy and just landing more frequently. So for those reasons, I'm picking Jacqueline Cavalcanti to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Nora Kanol versus Jocelyn Edwards. And this is a little bit similar, actually, to the fight that I've just broken down with Zara Fearn and Cavalcanti, because both Kanol and Edwards seem to be very similar fighters and prefer to strike. And yeah, I just feel like it's going to be another one of those fights that's very back and forth. The difference is the line is very close in this fight, which definitely, I think, reflects more of this fight than what it does in the fight that I've just broken down. But like I say, both fighters like to strike. They've got a good ability. They can both put good numbers of volume up. They target all levels of the opponent's body, and they can both be hit as well. They're both beatable, but they can both look good also. So it is a very, very interesting fight in regards to, like I say, just how closely they're matched up. Now, there's not going to be too much of technical analysis in this fight, because I don't really see a massive edge on either side, if I'm being honest. So if you are wanting to bet this fight and you're desperate to bet this fight, no idea why you would be, but if you are, then the plus money side is always going to be the right side, in my opinion. However, when it comes to picking a winner and a prediction, I'm going to always side with the, in a fight like this where it's very close, I'm going to be siding with the fighter that's got the UFC experience, that's been in there, in my opinion, with a better level of competition, that does have, you know, a couple of wins in the UFC as well, and that fight is Jocelyn Edwards. So for those reasons, I'm picking Jocelyn Edwards to win this fight. And in the next fight, this should actually be a really good fight. We've got Ange Loza versus Rhys McKee. Now, Rhys McKee, in this fight, making his second stint in the UFC, it didn't work out for him the first time around. However, the one thing you can say is the first time around, he fought Khamzat Chimaev before. Most people knew who Chimaev was. Obviously got beaten pretty comfortably by Chimaev, and then he had that war with Alex Morono. And even with Alex Morono, you can make the argument that, look, he's a legit solidified UFC fighter that's got some really good wins on his record. And McKee, even though he lost that fight, and he did lose that fight, you know, there was no controversy or anything on the decision, he did put up over 100 strikes in that fight. So look, it just wasn't the right time for McKee. And the one thing that I will say is, we've seen it time and time again, fighters that have that unsuccessful first stint in the UFC and then they come back again after going away and winning some fights, they tend to do a lot better. Now, there's many names that, you know, could be mentioned here, but the two that really stand out off the top of my head are Damon Jackson and Dustin Jacoby. Now, Jackson and Jacoby probably aren't going to touch UFC gold in their careers, although you can never say never. Again, we've seen so many fighters that we didn't think would ever be a champion and they've turned out to be a champion. So, look, with Damon Jackson and Dustin Jacoby, they are now solidified UFC fighters. They are very difficult to beat, a bit of a nightmare matchup for most fighters in and around that level. And I think that Rhys McKee might have that same sort of success. It just wasn't right for him that first time around. I know you can make, and I have made arguments and counters for those two losses that he had, but he went away after getting cut by the UFC, probably, you know, an unfortunate release from the UFC, but one that I do think was needed in regards to McKee just going away, getting some wins back under his belt. He was 23 when the UFC signed him, so he went away, won three fights outside of the UFC in Cage Warriors, became a Cage Warriors champion, and now he's back. So I think he's going to have developed a lot, and he has developed a lot since that first UFC stint. Like I said, he was so young when the UFC signed him, and I think he's going to provide a better account for himself this time around in the UFC. He's definitely going to win fights in the UFC for sure. Like, he's a really good fighter. He's a tall, long, rangy striker, good straight punches, good low kicks. He can wrestle, he can grapple. Like I say, you don't become a Cage Warriors champion if you are not a good fighter, and that's just a fact. The one thing that is still a little bit concerning from McKee's perspective is he is still somewhat hittable, and that was the problem Of course, what we saw in the Alex Morono fight, even in those three wins he had outside of the UFC from getting released, he was still hittable, he was still in wars, and he is durable, and that's great. You can't be overly reliant on that. So that is still a concern from McKee's perspective. He's got to tighten up that striking defense. Now with Angeloza, Angeloza's a good fighter as well. You know, he's a completely different frame, short, stocky, big power on his punches. He can put out some decent numbers of volume as well. And he's going to give most fighters a good fight. And I kind of feel like that's the fight that we're going to get here. We're going to see McKee from the outside striking in with his range, his straight punches, his kicks. We're going to see Loza loading up on that big right hand, potentially catching McKee a couple of times as well. And again, like I've already mentioned, that's the concern. Loza can wrestle as well. Loza can grapple as well. So I just feel like it's a really, really well-matched fight against both fighters, with two fighters, that are well-rounded everywhere, striking, wrestling, grappling. At this level, it's going to be competitive. They're both going to have the moments. But like I said, they've both got different frames, so it's going to make for an interesting fight. Now, I think that Angeloza, again, he's got to be able to load up on these punches and catch McKee, because I don't think that he's going to be able to put up the numbers of volume McKee's going to put up with. And I think that he's going to be chasing McKee a lot in the fight in regards to McKee just trying to stay on the outside. And again, I think there's going to be moments where he does catch McKee and it's going to get a little bit hairy. I do think there's moments where Loza might shoot in for a takedown, but I do, even though McKee can get taken down, I do like his get-up game. He's got the ability to stand back up even if he's hurt. He's got abilities to get on top of his opponent. Once he's on top, he's got good control. So like I say, I can go back and forth on either fighter here. Both fighters are going to be able to put up a good fight in this fight against each other. It's a really intriguing matchup, but I do like the fact that, look, although Loza's training at Killcliffe FC and he's got good fighters, good training partners, I think McKee's development since the last time we've seen him is going to be very noticeable, very evident inside the cage. I think he puts up good work, and I do feel that he could potentially just pull away slightly with the volume and edge out the rounds in this fight. We saw Loza against Munir Lazez, a pretty similar range and a pretty similar frame to what McKee's got. Obviously, I'm comparing him with Lazez. And Lazez was able to, you know, again, just pull away with that fight. It was a close and competitive fight against Loza. But Loza did seem to struggle for the most part over 15 minutes against that taller, longer, rangier fighter. And that's the type of fighter that McKee is. So like I say, although there's going to be really good moments from either side, the fight's going to be close and competitive. I have seen Loza struggle against a previous fighter that's got the same height, range and reach as what Rhys McKee's got. So for those reasons, I'm going to be picking Rhys McKee to win this fight. And finally, the last fight to break down, we've got Farid Basharat versus Clayton Rodriguez. The interesting note with this fight is that Rodriguez is finally making a move up to the bantamweight division. He just missed weight twice at flyweight and it just didn't seem like it was the right weight for him. I don't feel that he was overly huge for the division, but something wasn't right with the weight cuts. It wasn't quite working for him. And every fighter is different with weight cutting, how much weight they can lose and how big that last push is. So look, regardless of what he looks like to the eye, it was the right move for him. But this is a really difficult fight for Clayton Rodriguez. Clayton Rodriguez is a fighter that I was tipping to be a potential future star, and I have slowed down a little bit on that. I'm not ruling it out just yet because, like I said, he's had fights in a division that's clearly not his division, and we'll see more of where he's going to be at against Basharat. But Basharat, just like his brother, really fundamentally sound fighter, really good striking, really good wrestling, really good grappling, training with solid guys week in, week out. And although Rodriguez has got that exciting, explosive Brazilian style to his game, I'm just not sure that that is going to be enough to beat Basharat over the three rounds in this fight, which I do anticipate, unless Basharat catches Rodriguez with something hard or, you know, takes him down and Rodriguez makes a mistake and Basharat submits him. I do expect this fight to be closely competed over the three rounds. But when, even though it's a close fight, you can have a clear winner in a close fight. And I feel that that's the type of fight that we're going to get here. I think Basharat His speed, his movement, his volume, his output, and just the fact that he's so fundamentally sound both offensively and defensively, I think is going to favour him here from a striking perspective. If there's wrestling involved, again, Basharat is a good wrestler, trains with other good wrestlers as well. I do think that he's going to have a wrestling advantage, and therefore the topside grappling advantage should be with Basharat as well. We've seen Rodriguez on his back, and he can get a little bit stuck and struggling for position and to stand back up to his feet. So I think Basharat stylistically has got a good fight ahead of him here, just because I think he's that bit better than Clayton Rodriguez in every single discipline of MMA. And again, like I mentioned previously in this podcast and other podcasts as well, when that's the case, you normally have one fighter that just looks better than his opponent on the night. So for those reasons, I'm picking Farid Basharat to win this fight. And that's all for this episode of the podcast. I'm really looking forward to this card, actually. I think it's a bit of a firefight card. And I'm a bit disappointed we lost Lapillus and Gafarov, because I think that was going to be a really good fight as well. One of my favourite fights on the card that we've lost there. But that's it for the breakdowns. I hope you really enjoy UFC Paris. I know I'm looking forward to it. I'm expecting an early start as well. I've not actually looked at the start times, but I'm assuming it's going to be on the European time zone, or favoured in the European time zone. So I'm looking forward to that as well. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. As always, it is me that responds and replies to the comments on the YouTube channel. So if you are on YouTube and you are telling me, you know, where you agree with me, where you disagree with me, what your bets are, I'll always do my best to try and respond to everybody. I do have a busy schedule week in, week out, but honestly, I do try my best, and I always appreciate everybody tuning in, liking the video, and also subscribing to the MMA Play 365 YouTube channel as well. Of course, we are on all the other podcast platforms like Spotify, Amazon Music, Apple Music. So if you are preferring to tune in on the podcast platform opposed to YouTube, you've got options there as well. I'm Newsome. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week.